They were high school sweethearts.
Everyone, welcome back to your low effort, low quality podcast. The version of that. I think it might just be me today. We'll see. Liz might scuttle down here in a minute. Might be for the best. She's absent, honestly. Because boy, do we have some news this week. Some wild news. Yeah, I mean, what can you say, really? Charlie Kirk, dead at 32, shot dead, single bullet to the throat. I saw the video. Liz actually texted it to me. I was upstairs labor lawyering, as I do. And she's like, watch this video real quick before it disappears. And I was like, oh my God. But then I was like, this is fake, right? You generally don't believe any videos you see on the internet these days. Anything that you're like, that seems improbable. And you're like, okay, so probably AI or whatever. But then you're like, I don't know. It's kind of like a screen grab of a stream. Then you go online. Oh, well, okay, yeah. All right, shit. Pretty gruesome. Kind of thing. At the same time, if you grew up in the live leak era, brain fully destroyed by all that anyways. And if you're following the right accounts on Twitter, you kind of get a non-stop stream of that from war areas. So, but still, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, that's a pretty brutal way to go. Pretty brutal video, and not good. Not good. So the question becomes, how do you produce content about this? You know, if we're going to do the news, going to riff on the news, it's kind of the only news. And, you know, it's just a lot out there already. So you don't want to be duplicative of all that. But at the same time, you know, got to be careful. You got to be careful out there. Because the weird thing is, you know, and this is just a function of how I've engaged on the internet for a very long time. You're always just searching for little gems of content. Little gems of content. That's why I got interested in all sorts of little things over the years, various Craigslist communities, Cobra Tate and his gang of oddball misfits, just looking for fresh oddball content. And the thing is you can make that about any subject. I'm not saying I can, but others do. And there's so much to curate out there in the world that there is just some interesting, compelling, funny content. And that's what I look for. You know, some people look for reactions that help confirm their priors about how the libs love assassination or the right it loves wants to do a crackdown and is looking for some kind of just kind of fig leaf to start implementing full-blown fascism, whatever. And you can find those takes. You can curate those takes if you want. You know, we can go into how representative they are. I think it's a lot like the Sydney Sweeney situation, which seems to have been like a few accounts and then people just amplifying. Like, some people, that's where their mind goes. They're like, I want to find a whole bunch of reactions where people are saying it's good that he died because that makes my blood boil. And maybe I can try to get people fired and whatever. And I could go over that spiel again and how I'm not really a big fan of getting people fired for irrelevant bullshit. But you've probably heard it by now. Maybe I'll blip into it if I run out of time. So some people, that's the content they want to find. And then some people, they want to find content that reflects badly on the right. I want to find strange content, weird content that is amusing to me. Not because the death is amusing. It's not. It's fucking horrific. But just because watching people produce content is interesting. One of them that I saw, unfortunately, is more of a visual thing. I'm going to play some of this in a bit. Maybe against my best interest. This guy on TikTok, he's squatting, what is this, four plates? He's got like 40s. He's squatting, Jesus, you know, 500-600 pounds here. And that's all he does in the video is squats. And then he puts a caption over it that says, "The world's getting scary, man. People are being assassinated for having different opinions." But all he does is squat 600 pounds and then rack it. And then caption, that's it. That's wild. That's wild. We got this song here. This is a very popular song on TikTok. It has 2.2 million views. It's kind of like, I guess, if Macklemore were to write a like tribute song for Charlie Kirk. And this fellow, he's kind of staring into the video. He's got full blown, just wild face tattoos, just to kind of set the scene. But this is his song for Mr. Kirk.
Shot down and he was barely 31. Another woke coward took a life with a gun. He left behind a wife and a daughter and a son. All he did was try to speak for all of us. And I'm so tired of the hatred and the narratives. The patriots ain't dangerous, woke people are the terrorists. They shot and killed a father, sent a message to Americans. They ain't gonna stop until they bury us. Dear Charlie, I don't know if you can see us now, but if heaven has a window, I sure hope you're looking down. Cause we ain't going quiet, we gon' scream your name loud, and you're gone, but I swear to God that we gon' make you proud. We ain't backing off or giving up, I'll preach what you taught me. They may have killed a soldier, but that man had an army. This is far more deep than some political parties, and you can't kill freedom, so this one is for Charlie. This ain't the America that all our parents love, but good man try, think you're making it great. Pray they got.
What can you say? All right. Let's continue. We have this response from the New Zealand's. This is how it's described. Maori Christians. This is so baffling to me. New Zealand's Maori Christians pay tribute to Charlie Kirk with haka at vigil in central London. Why are New Zealand's Maori Christians in central London? I don't know, but the sound here is, if you've ever heard of haka before, just that. So it's not a whole lot to, but they're holding up photos of Charlie Kirk. I think that's enough of that. Let's see what else we got here. So when they So one of the interesting things here was the unfolding of the manhunt. Tyler Robinson, the alleged shooter, pops this shot off, runs across the building, hops off of it, and kind of scuttles away. Now, what was interesting about that, what I've just described, is that came from a video that was released, I think, the day that he was kind of caught. But the day before, all of the investigators and cops and stuff, they would go on the media and they would said they'd already released those two like photos, which were really not very helpful because he has like sunglasses on. I don't know. It's just like skinny white guy. Could be fucking anybody. But they said, we also have videos like Ring videos and whatever, but we're not going to release those because we're very confident that we have technology and we're going to be able to find this guy. And then within like 12 hours of saying that, they released the videos, which, you know, you put two and two together and it looks like we don't really have any idea what, like, we don't know who this person is or how to get them. And I mean, that's a pretty bad failure, obviously. I'm not saying I could do it better, but like, the whole idea of like, we're going to come in here, Kash Patel of the FBI is actually going to go to Utah and we're going to have an all hands manhunt. And this, you know, weird autistic, like, you know, online gamer guy, like, just shot and just kind of like walked away and no one could figure out where he was or who he was or anything like that. And then how they caught him, according to the reporting, is like he basically turned himself in, or his relatives kind of turned him in. There's a little bit of unclarity, the exact order of events there, but basically had nothing to do with anything the FBI or local law enforcement or anybody did. Like, they didn't actually do anything. He like went home, was telling people that he'd done it, and was encouraged to turn himself in, or maybe, you know, was ratted out by some of these. Like, that was it. That's the gangbusters process that the top dogs of law enforcement managed to pull off. But with that said, once it is done, there's, you know, a kind of like, we did it. Look at us. We in fact did nothing, but we have our guy. So I guess we get to act like we did it, and we're you know, we're holding up the torch of liberty and justice. But as part of that, of the celebration of apprehending a guy, even though they had nothing seemingly to do with the apprehension of it, Kash Patel says this, you know, at a press conference.
Lastly, to my friend Charlie Kirk, rest now, brother. We have the watch, and I'll see you in Valhalla.
This is the FBI director. Valhalla, what are we doing here? This is the, like, Viking heaven. Charlie Kirk's, like, pretty prominently Christian. Kash Patel, I guess I don't know his actual religion at the moment. But, you know, I think it's fair enough to say he's not a Viking pagan. I don't know if he's Christian or Hindu. We have this article from the Hindustan Times, which is claiming that he's Hindu. It's just fucking weird. It's just like nerd, goofy F's, nerd, internet shit. Like, that just dominates everything now. It's corny, it's cringe, but he thinks it's cool. He thinks it's like badass. Valhalla, Charlie. Oh my God. We just have to sit through this and just be like, yep. Yeah, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then we have the bullet casings. There are four bullet casings that were found with inscriptions on them. And one of them, which is being read here by the governor of Utah, just a sort of I guess is the best one. I mean, I don't know if we can rank them in that way, but, you know, it's sort of like, suppose you were just trying to shitpost and get someone to say something funny and outrageous or whatever. Like, that's kind of what has happened here, you know, in a bizarre way. It's like a very elaborate way to shitpost. There's like killing a prominent celebrity. And but here's that.
If you read this, you are gay, LMAO. If you read this, you are gay, LMAO.
Okay. There was a lot of humor, to my mind, around the half-mast situation. So Trump, you know, there's just like a kind of a question of tribute, and who's meant to do tributes, and what are the tributes supposed to look like? So one thing was Trump, who subsequently seemed totally disinterested in this the next day. They were asking him a question about it. Actually, let me pull that up as I'm talking. But he ordered you know, flags to be at half mast or whatever, you know. And, you know, it's like for government facilities or something to that effect, right? And that created some sort of comical, bizarre situations. Probably the most amusing one to me was that there's a military base in Cuba that's, you know, a U.S. military base, and it has a McDonald's on it. And so the McDonald's, because it is essentially under the command of the military, put its McDonald's flag at half mast. And, you know, it's just, you know, commerce and fast food and hell and all mixed together in the usual way, just dystopian America right in your face. But as part of that, there's this guy in Fishkill, New York, who I've been consuming a lot of his content, who has been going around Fishkill, New York. And this is a genuine person. He's not doing a bit, I'm pretty certain. He's been going around Fishkill, New York, and trying to enforce the Trumpian flag at half mast order. Oh no, was joined briefly, but and he's doing it, it seems like, primarily by just going to chain, like fast food chains, but then he also went to a Best Western. I don't know. But anyways, he goes into a McDonald's drive-thru and is incensed that the McDonald's has not put its flag at half mast. Again, this is just a random McDonald's in Fishkill, New York.
Have you been to the football today?
No, thank you.
What can I get for you?
I was just wondering why that flag out in front of McDonald's is not at half mast.
Also, he says half mast. And he actually captions the video half mast. So he does... It's not a dialectic thing. He's mess. He thinks it's half mess.
Why?
For the death of Charlie Kirk and the death of the 3,000 people in 9/11.
Wow.
Wow, she says.
It was ordered by the President of the United States for every American flag to be hung at half staff.
Yeah, what are you doing? So I need to wait.
I'll be back in an hour. If it's not done, I'm posting this all over line.
How about you do it now?
Why was 9/11? I mean, it was 9/11, but I don't think that was part of the thing. Maybe it was. Maybe it was. I shouldn't speak out, but he's got more of this.
Look at Best Western, people. Route 9, Fishkill. Flying the flag high. It's supposed to be at half mast. Let's see if we can get him to change it. Look at Best Western. People, Route 9, Fishkill.
He's just in his car taking a video of the flagpole at Best Western.
Look at Best Western, people.
Look at Best Western, people. Just a man. Does he not have a job? What are you doing? Just driving around trying to enforce. And then, you know. Anyways. What else we got here? The next day, Trump is asked about it. And I can't believe I can't find this video. I'm sure I can. Trump, ballroom, Kirk. Okay, yes, here we go.
How are you holding up over the last 3.5 days?
I think very good. And by the way, right there, you see all the trucks? They've just started construction of the new ballroom for the White House, which is something they've been trying to get, as you know, for about 150 years. And it's going to be a beauty. It'll be an absolutely magnificent structure.
So they ask him, like, how are you holding up, you know, with your friend's death? And he's like, I'm doing great. Also, look, those trucks are building the new White House ballroom, and it's going to be a beauty. He doesn't give a fuck at all. The interesting thing, the only thing I ever remember of Trump and Kirk together was Trump went to a campus and Kirk, as part of the event, like Kirk was there, maybe introduced him or whatever. And Kirk said something like, you know, usually I'm on these campuses and no one supports Donald Trump or whatever, you know, like, and Trump got mad at him for saying that. He's like, no, they do support me. They love me. Everyone loves me. And it was such a funny, like, kind of friction and conflict between these, like, differing approaches to, right? Like, Kirk is fully embodied the kind of, like, whiny, oppressed kind of conservative, where he's like, the whole of society is all the liberal institutions, the academy, the cathedral, the media, they're all conspiring against me, and they hate the conservative, and they're indoctrinating all these people to hate the conservative. But Trump is doesn't luxuriate as much in this notion of like, yeah, I'm beaten down. Like, he's like, no, I am triumphant. People love me. They support me. They, you know, on campuses, they love me. The kids, they love me. That sort of thing. So it was an interesting setup. I mean, there's an interesting, does anyone truly believe that Donald Trump really cares about, knows anything about Charlie? I mean, he doesn't really care about anything, you know, like the idea that he has some specific tie to Kirk is kind of preposterous. I mean, when he was doing the like podcast circuit ahead of the last election, he was doing like the young conservative podcast circuit, allegedly at the behest of Barron, his son. I don't think he went on Kirk's podcast or show. He went on a bunch of other like conservative, like young men, like podcasts, but not Kirk. So I wonder, I would love to know, like, did someone have to explain to him who Kirk even was as part of this process? Now, so far, I haven't really described, I guess, Kirk. I guess I assume, like, geez, man, anyone's listening to this podcast probably been bathing in this content for a whole week. And so they probably already knew to some extent who he was, or if they didn't, they know now. But actually, I think if you didn't know too much about him and you were just trying to read the reports about him, I think that those reports have been a little not to my, they don't match my understanding of the Kirk game, you know, and what he was up to. And I say this like, and I mean, that would make sense, right? So a lot of people writing about him newly, and obviously when someone dies horrifically, like that can, you know, kind of create a halo around them, and you want to write about them in a more sort of, you know, in a specific way, and that all makes sense. To me, like, this is coming from someone who I guess operates in the take game and also in the think tank game, even though I don't have any like big funders like some of these people. But like, you know, he operated in the business, he operated in the political money space, right? That's what he did. And this is an interesting distinction between left and right wing, like kind of politics content producers, especially ones that kind of come off as like independent and that sort of thing, is perversely, the left primarily has, if they want to produce kind of like left-wing political content and make that be their job, the kind of job where you can go around on campuses or just do like Twitch streams or YouTube videos or podcasts or whatever, because there's really not a whole lot of like philanthropic money out there on the left to just like give money to those people, the left-wing content people have to actually stand up in a sense successful businesses. They have to actually be able to attract subscribers or maybe advertisers sometimes enough that they can actually fund what they're doing, right? So like Hassan Piker has to actually get enough people on his Twitch stream or his YouTube or whatever, you know, however he's distributing. He's got to actually be able to generate enough revenue through just the normal process of creating like an entertainment company in order to make that go. On the right, that is never really a thing. Some of them do. There are some successful right-wing content producers who do actually get just like a lot of viewers and subscribers. But the understanding on the right is that there's a lot of money that is kind of there to just subsidize producers like that. And like, if you want to compete in that market, a lot of what you're compete, the way you compete is you try to attract some of that money to yourself. So you don't really have to succeed in a formal business sense where you get subscribers and revenue from the people who consume your content. There are people who want to pay you just to have other people look at your content, to get eyeballs on your content, right? PragerU, I think, is like kind of a classic example of this. There's so many PragerU videos, and they even make their way into schools and stuff like that. And PragerU is not a profitable enterprise. If you go on YouTube and whatever, it's like those videos. Some of them have a lot of views, but they're not generating enough revenue to pay all of the production and everything that goes into that. But there's money coming from philanthropic people who just want to like push that into eyeballs. And Clark Kirk seemed primarily to operate in that world, right? So his kind of classic business was really a sort of road show, in a way very similar to like a traveling comic, similar enough that he even like primarily did crowd work, right? So he's sort of like, he's not a comic, but he, I think business model wise, it's like a comedian who is going on tour, and but he only tours campuses. And campuses are kind of the easiest place to set up like a performance because there's all these kids that don't have jobs. I mean, depending on the campus, but the kind of campuses go to. And so you can kind of attract audiences because it's just, what are you going to do? Like, I remember when I was at the University of Oklahoma, there was this guy who would show up all the time, and he apparently went to a lot of campuses in the Midwest, and his name was Brother Jed, a.k.a. Bro Jed. And Bro Jed was like a Christian, I don't know if a minister precisely, but he would come onto campus and he would just do something very similar to Kirk, right? Where he would kind of create this spectacle, get this big audience of kids watching him, and then he would do crowd work and they would ask him stuff about Christianity or ask him stuff about whatever, and he would do his show basically and talk about how he had all these like one-liners about how the women on campuses are whores and whatever, and like everyone gets real like, you know, that just kind of riles everyone up. And he had huge audiences would just accumulate like on the sidewalk to watch him, hundreds and hundreds of people. And Kirk had a show that was basically the same as Bro Jed's. And in a way, it's kind of a genius setup because you can show to donors, look at this audience that I have. And it's young people who are impressionable. And so you pay me, I will kind of go on the road, do a kind of traveling road show where I'd kind of read a little spiel and then mostly do crowd work and take questions and whatever. And you'll be able to have this impact on society, impact on culture. You'll be able to fight back against the indoctrination on campus and, you know, the youth are the future and whatever. And people would, you know, big money people would like help finance that. That's my understanding of how that goes. And I mean, what's weird about it is, in a way, it's kind of fundamentally a grift, right? Because like I said before, attracting hundreds of people, even thousands of people, depending on the size of the campus, is not that hard, especially at a lot of campuses. There's just not a, like I said, the kids aren't working. There's not a whole lot going on. I remember at the University of Oklahoma, there was this guy who gave a lecture about intelligent design. And, you know, because it's kind of provocative, you know, it's anti-evolution and whatever, he gave it in like one of the big, I don't know, like theaters essentially on campus. And there were probably 800 people there to listen to him talk about intelligent design and, of course, get on the mics and question him and tell him that he doesn't know what he's talking about and whatever. And I wonder if when you're pitching that to donors that they don't fully understand that getting a crowd like that at a campus is really not that hard, especially if you have the ability to like be provocative. Like if it's even just a little bit provocative, like kids will just show up just for the spectacle. And I wonder if the donors maybe may not have understood the degree to which that didn't really, probably didn't move the needle that much. You know, it's like, it's, the audience is not just like, interesting point. You know, like that's not why most of them come. And Turning Point USA in general, I guess, which was his organization, and it's kind of, there's just so many campus organizations that function like that. I actually saw one recently for the abundance movement, you know, the like Ezra Klein, Derek Thompson, like they're trying to remake the Democratic Party and all that kind of stuff. I've covered that here. And it was like abundance on campus. And there was this, you know, very earnest undergraduate or whatever, maybe, you know, saying that she was launching 13 abundance of, you know, student groups on 13 different campuses in America. And it's like, that's the same. That is the same thing as Turning Point USA. Like that is just a understood business model in the influence politics game, right? Like that, whoever, someone is funding that, and the idea is we'll start some student groups, and that will kind of create a pipeline of people who will help promote this and can kind of maybe be some foot soldiers in some campaigns, right? Because we're going to have some abundance politicians, and they're going to need volunteers for their campaigns and all the rest of it, right? But I pointed out, this is like a donor thing. And I feel like, to my mind, what I understood Kirk is primarily being that, you know, I'm not to say that that means he didn't have any talent or whatever, but it's just always striking to me how different that model is from what like left wing influencers have to do, where they actually have to somehow make it work, like as a subscription model, myself included. Why did I say all that? Just to cover some stuff, I guess. What do I have here? Some more interesting content on this. There was a story. You know, there's a ton of news coverage of this, obviously, especially once they finger Tyler Robinson as the alleged shooter. And so they swarm into his neighborhood and they start asking his neighbors about him. And there was one story, and I'll just read the snippet from it. It goes like this. One neighbor who lives across the street from the Robinsons declined to be named. He said he's, quote, blind to the world and only learned about Robinson's arrest when he saw reporters and law enforcement in the street this morning. He was agnostic about the massive media presence on his street. Mother Nature is Mother Nature. Whatever she calls to do, let's do it, he said, and was similarly accepting when asked about Robinson, the subject of a massive 48-hour search living just across the street. If it's close to home, if it's 50 miles from me, it's the same damn thing, he said. Shit happens, and that's what it is. I shared this on Twitter, and it got quite a lot of, moved. We got 832,000 engagements, interactions, or whatever. Almost 10,000 likes. But I love this quote. There's a lot going on here, which I think is fascinating, right? So, one, he just says, "Hey, I'm blind to the world." If you were to kind of consume the media, you'd think like the whole country is in the grips of Charlie Kirk's death and that sort of thing. And it ain't so. Now, it did kind of saturate the media. I'm sure like the majority of people must have heard about it, even if they didn't previously know who Charlie Kirk was. But we do have folks still out there in the game who are like, "I don't really pay attention to anything. And I didn't know about any of this until you guys showed up in my neighborhood," which is interesting. Now, the second thing, which is, I feel like, very advanced and very, he's very detached from the world, is when he says, when it says he was agnostic about the massive media presence on his street, quote, "Mother Nature is Mother Nature. Whatever she calls to do, let's do it," which implies that to him, like reporters and news trucks are also part of Mother Nature. So it's not, the usual kind of greeny sense of like, oh, we go out into the woods and whatever, like just humans swarming around like ants. Like that's how he envisions it. I'm reading this onto the quote, but it's like, oh, this is just sort of like, when you kick an ant colony and they all kind of swarm around and whatever. This is sort of the same thing. And it's whatever. It's what Mother Nature does. I'm not really bothered by it, which is, fascinating. And then I really like this aspect of it where he says, if it's close to home or if it's 50 miles from me, it's the same damn thing, which implies to him that like the most distant thing he can even think of as existing in his universe is something that happens 50 miles away. Once you get beyond 50 miles, you're basically in outer space. Like that just doesn't even exist to him, which would be consistent with his otherwise oblivious nature. But anyways, very fascinating guy, very fascinating response. And I must give it to the reporter for actually putting this down and publishing. I think one of the, there were a lot of, not a lot, but a handful of responses to this, which were just like, why do they publish it? This guy basically is like, I don't know and I don't care. But I think there's some, in a way, it's like publication bias with studies where, if you get a null result, you don't publish that you got a null result because a null result's not interesting. But then if you don't publish that you got a null result, nobody knows that there's all these null results out there. And so that ends up biasing like the body of research out there because it looks like there's all these really interesting results, but there's a bunch of null results that just never got published. I feel like this is sort of the equivalent of that. We need a little bit more, like, obviously the reporter's looking for some juicy person who's real wound up and is going to give some, like, quotes. Or maybe they're just looking for some generic filler quotes where the person's like, oh my God, I can't believe I never knew, lived with this person, blah, blah. But to actually be like, here's a guy. He said he had no idea and he doesn't care. Put him in. Let's reflect the entire broad scope of humanity in our publication. I appreciate that. There was a moment of silence on Monday Night Football. There was some kind of tribute to him at Yankee Stadium. Before tonight's game, we held a moment of silence in memoriam of Charlie Kirk. Kirk founded the youth activist group Turning Point USA and had become a fixture in college campuses. The other interesting thing about this is the reaction to the death, other than obviously there's just the surface level, like, this is bad, this is horrible, it's gruesome, it's horrific, no one should be shot dead, boom, right? But then there's, people want to do more than that, right? Which is fair enough, right? You want to try to understand what's going on here. What what's happening? How do we make, what is the significance of this to politics, to technology, to the state of the society, right? That's what we all want to do. That's kind of the more interesting aspects of it, right? But because they didn't catch the guy for like 3 days, and then even after they've caught him, it's still, as I speak and I'm recording this right now, not really clear what the deal is, you know? Like, the bullet casings were like gamer references. There's the, if you're reading this, you're gay, LMAO. There's the Bella Ciao, which on the one hand is an anti-fascist Italian anthem or whatever. So I read, I'm act like I know this. I don't fucking know. First I've ever even heard of this thing. But then you also read, people are like, well, no, it's also a big video game thing, because obviously there's a lot of video games that are around World War II. And so we don't know that, you know, the bull inscriptions aren't really helping in that much. His family, it seems like we're getting a decent number of reports, including some comments from his own family that says that they are conservative, you know, Trumper types. But that doesn't necessarily mean he is, right? That certainly doesn't follow. And then today we get some remarks from the governor saying that he lived with a roommate who was transitioning from male to female. Were they romantically involved? I'm not sure. I've seen that suggested, but I haven't seen it in like the publications I'd like to see it in before I feel confident with it. So we're in this like suspended period where we've had to produce a lot of takes. We don't have to produce them, but people produce them, right? We've had to produce a lot of takes in a period where we don't actually have the information we need to make interesting takes, like to make good takes, like that seize on something. And that has generated a lot of odd outcomes. One that, I mean, it's whatever. I'm not trying to get here and be really mad at Ezra. Who gives a fuck, right? Like, whenever someone dies, you know, you're going to give them a lot of positive press. You know, like, if I die and people deem it worthy enough to write something about it, I would assume they're going to overstate my significance, my kindness, my generosity, and all the rest of it. And whatever. It is what it is. But, you know, part of the conflict here is Kirk's politics. To my mind, he's a talking head guy. He says provocative things. It's whatever. It's a bit you can do. It's, you know, I don't know. Who cares, right? Like, I can't imagine being fucking, like, pissed at it. Like, angry enough to kill someone who, like I said, essentially has like a road show on campus where he does like crowd work. And, you know, it's like kind of like Ben Shapiro, but stupider. Like, you know, it's whatever, you know, like it's bizarre to imagine. But with that said, if you cared at all, like, he was kind of an edgelord type figure, not as edgelordy as a Nick Fuentes or, and not as like bro-y and confrontational as like a Steven Crowder, but he, you know, I wouldn't say he was like a mainstream conventional Republican in the respectable sense, right? Like, you would have a lot of, you could, if you cared, which I never did, about the content, you would have a lot of things to seize upon where you're like, wow, this person is not really, you know, they're not engaging on the level. Not even that they have bad opinions or that they're engaging in bad faith, but that they're saying some pretty extreme stuff that tends towards promotion of coups and killing of enemies and that sort of thing. And so that puts you in a I don't think a tough position, because you just say, it doesn't matter what people said, you can't kill them, blah, blah, blah. Ben Burgess had a piece of Jacobin, which was of that sort, totally fine. But if you want to go a little bit further than that, what do you say? Do you say, like, yeah, you know, fucking horrific, awful thing, but also, you know, if we want to get into the substance of this guy, he, you know, kind of a shitlord, edgelord, illiberal, kind of flirting with, you know, some fascistic type stuff, you know, to put it lightly. Or do you say he was actually a good, you know, even though I disagree with him, he was a good man and a good discourse participant who really pursued it the right way. And Ezra Klein decided to go the latter way. So we have this on September 11th. Charlie Kirk was practicing politics the right way, is the headline they gave it. And it starts like this. The foundation of a free society is the ability to participate in politics without fear of violence. To lose that is to risk losing everything. Charlie Kirk and his family just lost everything. As a country, we came a step closer to losing everything, too. And then he goes and talks about Nancy Pelosi's house being, you know, infiltrated. He talks about a plot to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer. He talks about Jan 6 at the Capitol. He talks about Luigi killing the United Healthcare executive. And all this is just meant to be like, these are illiberal moves where instead of just debating people or fighting it out at the ballot box, people actually went to do something violent and kill someone. And that is kind of the line, the boundary that we don't step over. Because once you step over that, the whole idea of having a deliberative democracy in like the Habermasian sense goes out the window. And, you know, having a deliberate democracy is really crucial. And then this is sort of like, you know, liberalism 101, right? Is that in order to have a liberal, free and democratic, deliberative society, there are certain things that you cannot do and that you cannot. And you don't want to say cannot express. That gets a little bit dodgy, but that you shouldn't organize to do because, you know, there are like a few basic axiomatic bedrock things that have to be established in order for the whole other system to run. And one of those things is, you know, nonviolence in that sense. And he goes on and on with more examples. And he says, you can dislike much of what Kirk believed. And the following statement is still true. Kirk was practicing politics in exactly the right way. He was showing up to campuses and talking with anyone who would talk to him. He's one of the era's most effective practitioners of persuasion. I don't think so. When the left thought its hold on the hearts and minds of college students was nearly absolute, Kirk showed up again and again to break it. Slowly, then all at once, he did. College-age voters shifted sharply right in the 2024 election. Now, do we really believe that Kirk was a significant cause of the, I would say, somewhat slight shift to the right of college-age voters? I think heretofore, prior to Kirk's death, the kind of consensus was that this is happening on the internet, that this is happening through famous kind of podcasters, manosphere, conservative types, you know, the Joe Rogans, the who's that guy, like various kind of comedian podcasts, like that's where it's happening. And that seemed much more plausible to me. Again, the idea that this guy shows up on your campus, is there for a couple hours, does essentially like a little show, and that is moving large numbers of people and sentiment is kind of ridiculous, right? I mean, like I said, it is ultimately sort of a grifty business that you're in to convince donors that actually matters that much. But whatever. That's his move. Here's the problem, right? So if you want to be like, hey, maybe Kirk has bad politics, whatever, but one, killing people is anti-liberal, and two, Kirk was, for whatever else you thought about him, was liberal. He was engaged in liberal, democratic, discursive, deliberative politics where he would go out and try to persuade you. And that was his thing. The problem is that he's got so much content out there, Kirk does, that you can just find all of these snippets where he's not doing that, where he's in fact egging on the exact kind of like illiberal, violent stuff that Ezra's like, this is just beyond the pale. This is the kind of thing that we cannot have, right? He is egging on the thing that Tyler did to him, right? Which was to not just go up and try to convince Kirk that he was wrong and he should change his views or whatever, but just kill him or do something like that. And probably the most clear example of that comes from February of last year on the Charlie Kirk show. He says this about Joe Biden, who at the time is the sitting president of the United States, duly elected. And this is what Kirk has to say.
Joe Biden is a bumbling, dementia-filled, Alzheimer's corrupt tyrant who should honestly be put in prison and or given the death penalty for his crimes against America.
This is just one snippet, right? There are other examples, but it's like that is, I mean, even more illiberal, even more acid to the foundations of having a liberal democratic, deliberative democratic society, right? You know, it's one thing to kill a like content guy. It's another thing to say that in your view, the president of the United States should go to prison and be killed on some bullshit. You know what I mean? So he wasn't practicing politics the right way. And, you know, how would Ezra know this? I guess this is sort of part of the problem. Ezra had to pump this out for the next day, literally the day after he's killed, without having any knowledge of who did it or what the motives were or anything. He's got to pump this out. He's obviously aware of Kirk, but he doesn't know what all Kirk does and says and all that. And so, you know, he writes himself into a corner here that just doesn't scratch out. Like I said, does it really matter? I don't know. I just want to say that in that debate, because it was kind of a clash where Ezra put that out there, and then there were some lefties being like, this is bullshit, this is BS, and then you would have a reaction that was like, oh my God, see, actually, the lefties thinks it is okay to kill him, or oh, you guys are conflating having bad ideas with proceeding in an illiberal way, and it's like, let me kind of be the final judge of that debate and say that obviously, there's lots of different moves people may have been making, but the left move that says, no, he advocated the precise kind of illiberal actions that, you know, has taken him down. And it's all bad. You know, it's not to say if you advocate it, therefore you should. No, that doesn't follow either. But like, it's not the case that Charlie Kirk just loved persuading people. He's calling for the president's execution, you know, like if he weren't a clown, if he weren't just kind of like a content clown on the internet, that would have been like very significant, right? Like if Mitch McConnell had said that, that would have been like pretty significant. Again, maybe not so anymore. I don't know. Like Trump gets away with saying all sorts of wild stuff, right? But in a traditional sense, we would find that to be odd. Like if you were reading in the newspaper that the opposition an opposition leader in some foreign country was calling for the democratically elected president to be executed, you'd be like, wow, what a fucking banana republic. What's going on over there? And like, you know, we wouldn't have a hard time calling it that illiberal and certainly not practicing politics the right way. What else here? Oh, we're 53 minutes. I thought I was going to have to do a lot more than that, but, I feel like I had a few more items here. I mean, I guess I mentioned this briefly at the top, but I'll just rehearse this stuff again, I guess. It's always worth going through. I read this. So, you know, despite all of the, you may have been confused for a little bit into thinking that conservatives had this view that It's woke and unjust and wrong in all sorts of ways to try to get people fired from jobs just because they say some shit that you don't like and that you think is beyond the pale, right? So-called cancel culture, all the rest of it. You might have thought, wow, the scoldy liberals and left, they love calling the boss. It's kind of like an entire politics of Karenhood, where if someone who works at fucking Dollar General posts a TikTok, that's where he says the N-word and he shouldn't have because he's white, then he needs to lose his job at Dollar General. And that's what the sicko left wants. And, you know... But not conservatives, because they don't care about that. You know, they want to divorce these things. If you ever believe that, I feel like you kind of, you know, you made a mistake. We'll just put it that way. I was kind of always a little bit conflicted by it, because on the one hand, I don't like getting people fired for just saying shit. And I mean, this goes back a long time. It goes back to even before I was... you know, fired for tweeting some, you know, ultimately fairly innocuous stuff, I think. Certainly in retrospect, it doesn't seem all that serious, but calling someone a scumbag on the internet is like, is that really a fireable thing? But before that, in 2014, I wrote a piece about the Mozilla CEO. You guys remember this? Brian Icke. Brian Icke was the Mozilla CEO. Mozilla makes Firefox and I guess other things too, like Thunderbird, one of those entities, you know, big browser. And there was this guy, Brendan Icke, who was their CEO. And he had donated some money some years prior to some kind of like anti-gay marriage initiative. You know, they had all these ballot initiatives, you know, either to make it legal or illegal or whatever. And he had donated money on the side of one of these ballot initiatives that was anti-gay marriage, you know, because he thinks gay marriage is bad, presumably why he donated it. And this came out like, I don't know, these donations became public at some point and people were pointing it out, and the tech people who were very progressive at the time, people forget about this, but they used to be left and whatever. Now they're conservative. You know, they rallied to get him fired. And I think they did get him fired. And I wrote a couple pieces about it at the time because, you know, the conservatives were really mad about this. But what was weird is prior to that event, there was a lot of conservative writing where they were saying, hey, you shouldn't use the state to try to like tamp down on like anti-gay discrimination and anti-gay bigotry. You should just try to persuade people. So think about like the gay cake stuff, like the gay wedding cakes and all that kind of stuff, right? There was a period there where it was like, okay, so what do we do? Like, we've kind of gotten over the hump vis-a-vis gay marriage. And, you know, in general, like, gay acceptance just kind of had run its course. But what do we do about things like, what if a business doesn't want to, you know, serve a gay customer? What about if a blah, blah, blah. And then like the perfect little niche was like the cake, the gay wedding cake. What if an independent wedding cake person, so not someone at Costco or I don't know if there's like chains, they own their own personal cake business and they do wedding cakes. But they won't do a gay wedding cake because it goes against their Christian views. And because it's not just like renting chairs, like cake making is like expressive and creative in some way. It's almost kind of like a speech act, I guess. And so, you know, like it's just setting up for a perfect conflict there. Like, what do we do there? And, you know, the kind of left position was to say, well, we just treat it like any other anti-discrimination thing, right? Like if you won't make a wedding cake for a black couple, well, you know, we have rules that say that businesses can't discriminate like that. We're just going to add gay people to the list. And then, you know, conservatives would be like, that's not fair. You know, you shouldn't use the state to clamp down on people. People do have sincere religious views. You should just use like civil society mechanisms, persuasion mechanisms, whatever. And what I thought was interesting about this case was this is the civil society mechanism, like in theory. Now, I actually think that when employers act, that also involves actions of the state. I don't think they're disentanglable in the way that we all pretend that they are for sort of liberal capitalist reasons. But if we put that aside, a law is a state action, whereas if you could convince companies to just like fire people who are anti-gay, then that's like civil society. And that conservatives are okay with that. They're skeptical of the state. They're okay with like private civil society and all that kind of stuff. In fact, there's a symmetry here, right? Because they want to say they don't want the state to step in and prevent you from like firing someone for being gay, right? That's okay. But if you try to fire someone for being anti-gay, then they would get mad about that, even though that isn't that the private civil society mechanism for trying to stamp out anti-gay bigotry, whatever. And I would just point all this out to demonstrate my view at the time, which continues to be my view, which I think is very well illustrated by this example, what we're seeing today, where people are trying to get people fired for saying bad things about Charlie Kirk. And that is that this is all bullshit. When people come to you and they make these kind of broad, content neutral claims where they're like, no, it's not that I just disagree with the thing that you are pushing. I don't like the mechanism. I don't think someone should lose their job just because they have bad politics. I don't think you should use the state to clamp down on someone because, you know, the state is so oppressive and really should be done through civil society and, you know, social shaming and all that kind of, all that is true until the content of the dispute flips and then everyone changes their view. And now all of a sudden, the conservative who got mad about woke cancel culture is now super pumped about getting someone fired for saying negative things about Charlie Kirk. Right? And it's like, it is what it is. Liberalism, for the most part, is fake. Very few people actually have like very principled views in which they're willing to say, oh, we need to be careful and not exercise power against this dissident person because, it would destroy the foundations of deliberative democracy if we push it too far. Just people don't do that. They want to crush their enemies and protect their friends, and they kind of are willing to use whatever mechanism is available to them. If they can control the state to do it, they'll control the state to do it. If they can control private institutions to do it, they'll control private institutions to do it. It's just all, you know, an endless power struggle. Except for me, of course. I'm the only principled one. Now, there are a few people who are fairly principled. Like I said, Ben Burgess wrote a whole book about this. And, I don't mean to overstate it. But I wrote a piece saying, essentially, I analyzing all that, everything I just said. But then also saying, like, dude, why are we going after this Brendan Eich guy? He was one anti-gay dude, donated a chunk of money trying to roll back gay marriage. So what? He has ultimately lost on that, and it's a drop in the bucket relative to the forces that operate against LGBT people. That's what I wrote back in 2014. So I'm not a fan of this. And in general, as I've said before, it's so bizarre because people don't ever really express what is the goal here, right? So, okay, this person who works at this university, we're going to get them fired. Because they said, I hate Charlie Kirk and I'm glad he's dead, right? You know, something similar to what, you know, Kirk was saying he wanted Joe Biden to be executed, right? But he shouldn't have been fired for that comment. Obviously, he's an American hero. Okay, so what does it mean to say you want them fired? Do you want them to not have jobs ever? Or just not that job? And why do you care so much about that job? Okay, so they get, like, if they lose their job at LSU and then go and work, get a job at, the University of Louisiana. Oh, okay. Is that okay? Is that what, so you just want them to change universities? Why? What is achieved by that? Or do you want them to just not have any job? And if they can't have any job, how do you expect them to get income? And if they're not supposed to get income, are you saying you want them dead? You're saying that you think the proper social sanction in the society is that if you say that you're glad Charlie Kirk was killed, that you should die through starvation, right? Because you probably don't want them receiving welfare. Is that the position? No, and it's like no one will ever articulate, like, wait, how is this supposed to work as an overall system? What happens when this person, is it just supposed to be kind of like a little bit inconvenient for them because they have to go find another job and that kind of sucks and whatever? That's it? It's just like a little, you know, why? What's the point? And I get it. It's just like, well, look, we have a big enough edifice set up that the state just usually doesn't go after people for this, though that's not strictly true. People are being fired in like the military and stuff for saying things about it. Like public employees are being fired by the government for saying stuff about Charlie Kirk. I would love to get one of those cases and bring, you know, there's like some First Amendment problems there. But putting that aside, people just kind of say, well, I can't use the state to crack down on them, but we are still allowed to use the employment system to crack down on them. And so I'm just going to crack down on them. And but then to what end? Like, what is the final resolution of this? And I've used this analogy before, but I think, you know, we really need to stop thinking about jobs as this kind of like privileged thing. Like a job is a place you go to produce things for the economy. You know, it's not a special thing. It's not a reward. It's not something you know, you should only have if you, you know, don't say beyond the pale stuff about Charlie Kirk or about whatever, right? Sometimes people do say things or behave in ways that genuinely make them unqualified for the job that they are doing. I get that. You know, that can be a tricky line, but no one is. I mean, maybe there's some jobs I'm not even thinking about, but most of these jobs, almost all the jobs I've seen where people are trying to get people fired, their ability to execute the job and produce the good or service that they're producing has nothing to do with anything about their opinion on Charlie Kirk or things they've expressed on social. It's got nothing to do with it. And so what's the point here? You know? And I've used this analogy before, like jobs are like bathrooms, right? Everyone needs to be able to go to the bathroom. And it would be weird to be like, you know what? This guy, he said something bad about Charlie Kirk. I think he should be banned from all bathrooms. I think he should not be allowed to use the bathroom anymore. It's like, what are you talking about? So that continues to be my view. I really don't like it when anyone does this. Again, occasionally you can find connections where it really is the case that, like, it makes you unqualified for the job. Like, oh, I guess, like, I imagine, like, what if you work for, like, a conservative political organization, you know, and you're saying this and, the, you know, like, okay, you know. But outside of those weird situations where I guess you would say it is a bona fide occupational qualification that you not have posted something like that, outside of those fringe kinds of jobs where that's true, just leave people alone. Let them work. I almost wish, like, why don't you just tell them they suck? Like, I just don't. I'm not saying that, you know, maybe you can even say, well, there should be some social, but the social sanction could just be you being like, you fucking suck. I hate you. Just tell them that. What is gained by reducing employment in the society? You know? But I mean, I get it. People don't care about the overall systemic question. They just want to act out and cause pain to perceived enemies and, you know, in whatever way they have access to in our system. The thing you can do is push the firing button. And so people push that button. That's the button that's available to them. But I wish they wouldn't. And more than that, I'd actually go further than that. I wish the state would intervene to remove that button. I think it should be illegal to fire someone for their, especially off the clock, expression of political views. Again, maybe we make some exception for bona fide occupational qualifications where certain expressions don't actually fit because you're literally working for like a political party or whatever, right? There might be some, but by and large, yes, I think it should be your ability. And let's bring it all back around, actually, into the Ezra Klein point here. It attacks the foundations of a liberal society to say that the way that you want to engage in politics, which you're supposed to be engaging in, you're a citizen who participates in the democratic society, trying to persuade people, being a voter, that you have to, that the way that you engage there, you have to be careful because if you do it the wrong way, you won't get killed, but you will lose all of your income, which amounts to effectively the same thing over a long period of time. It's like, it can be as devastating, if not more. Like, that is illiberal. Employers need to focus on producing goods and services, you know, and not on policing the political activities of their workers who are supposed to be free citizens who can participate in the political process, just as Kirk was a free citizen who should have been able to participate in the political process, say the things he wants to say without being killed. People should be able to say the things that they want to say without being fired. These are equivalently, I want to say equivalently, where obviously death and firing, like one is more extreme than the other, but they both infringe on the same like liberal rights. They both eat at the foundation of a liberal, deliberative, democratic society in essentially the same way. And you know, just fucking nobody cares, unfortunately. But all right, so that's what we got on Kirk, and we will be back with another episode soon.